Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Aaron Newcomb. Episode 150 for January 26th, 2011. Ledger. Floss Weekly is brought to you by MailRoute for all your email spam and virus protection. Visit MailRoute.info and get a 10% discount for the life of your account. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free Libre open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, bringing you shows week by week by week about open source software, all things big projects, small projects, important people, maybe not so important people. No, we leave those people out. All everybody here is important on the show. I love doing this show. I love bringing it to you. This week, if you may notice from the background, for those watching the video, I am on the second floor of the ninth tallest building on my block. Yes, I'm back at my home with the nice big blue Yeti mic and the brand new Logitech C910 camera. So it should be a little bit brighter and clearer and prettier for those of you watching the video. But speaking of pretty, that's a good segue. I'm going to bring on my co-host. Hello, Aaron Newcomb. Welcome back.
Hey, Randall, I'm pretty today. I didn't even shave. You can't call me pretty. Come on.
Aaron's, of course, in the Twit Cottage, so he gets the really, really cool cameras and really, really cool mics. But that's not second bad. It's close, right?
Yeah, almost. No, you definitely look a lot better in the monitor today, so that's good. Yeah, it's tough to compete with the professional gear here at the Twit Cottage, but definitely a step up.
Good deal. Especially those big flat panel lights and everything. Boy, I tell you, last time I was at Twit Cottage a couple of years ago, it was just really amazing seeing how much gear they actually have to have there. But we're just rambling because I really want to do is bring on or talk about my co-host. You're the co-host. Talk about my guest for this week. We've got John Weigley on this week. He's going to talk to us about Ledger. Ledger is an open source software package that does double entry accounting, being able to manage like all of your cash flows and all your financial flows and be able to generate reports based on that. And he's been working on this project, I think, for almost 10 years now. So it's been quite a while. And we'll talk to him about all sorts of things that are about accounting, open source stuff, and how the project came to be. But first, before we do that, I have a sponsor. I love sponsors. Thank you for sponsoring this show, sponsors. And please also, audience, go and take advantage of the kind of deals that sponsors have. Because today I want to talk about MailRoute.info. So businesses of every size use MailRoute. Over one user or 50,000 users, doesn't matter. MailRoute's going to protect you from spam and viruses, simplify your life, and make your email usable again. So what MailRoute is a secure hosted service that filters viruses and spam of any size. So whether you're a single user or a company with tens of thousands of employees, MailRoute can eliminate viruses and spam, reduce the load on your email server, lower your costs, and make your email usable again. Typical MailRoute customers see a 95% reduction, that's impressive, in their inbound email volume with virtually no false positives. Leo Laporte himself loves MailRoute. He's been using the service for his domains for more than 6 years, and MailRoute has been his top choice for spam and virus filtering all along. Tom Barrett started using MailRoute and knows he can use email domains that he'd given up on being able to use as hopeless. Tom Johnson is the founder and CEO of MailRoute. He started one of the very first companies in the market in 1998 called FrontBridge. FrontBridge was later acquired by Microsoft in 2005 and is still offered as Microsoft Exchange hosted services line, which some of you may use. Tom wasn't done, though. He had too many good ideas that couldn't stand to see go to waste. So he started MailRoute, his next generation service for filtering email with a level of accuracy and a price that's unmatchable. There's nothing easier for mail filtering than MailRoute. There's no hardware, no software to install, nothing for you to do. You just sign up with MailRoute and then change your MX records for your domain to start your mail flowing through them. And then they send back all the mail that's already been filtered, the other 5% that's actually useful material. So if you visit MailRoute.info to sign up, you're going to get, as a Twit listener, special code for your MailRoute.info. You're going to receive a 10% discount for the life of your account. Very cool. Small business accounts start at $2 per user per month for 10 users. And because of the demand from the Twit Army, that's us, Mailrout has added a new service for individual users as well, less than $30 per user per year for single users. And I tell you, $30 a year to get rid of 95% of that junk that comes in there, very much worth it. So visit mailrout.info and sign up with the email filtering service that Tom and Leo use. And now let's go ahead, unless you have any last words, Aaron, do you have any questions or ideas before we bring on our guest?
No, I'm really excited to hear about Ledger. I've never really encountered Ledger before, so this is a brand new one for me.
It is also new for me, so let's go ahead and bring on our guest. And hello, John.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Doing well, doing well. Where are we speaking to you from?
I'm in northern New Jersey.
Northern New Jersey, anywhere near the Jersey Shore?
No, I'm about an hour away from the Jersey Shore.
Oh, good, good. So you're safe from all those strange people that we see on television these days. Yeah. Very cool, very cool. Well, we brought you on today to talk about Ledger. Let's start by finding out what problem Ledger solves, and then we'll talk about how Ledger solves it. So give us the 30-second overview.
It's a double-entry accounting system. I had been using Quicken and GNU Cash for a long time, and mm-hmm. I found that not only were those systems a little too complex, but there are just a lot of things it couldn't do. So I decided to write a command line tool that would focus on just that aspect of the problem, but be very flexible in reporting.
Now, for those of us who have no accounting background whatsoever and can barely keep our checkbook straightened, give us sort of what is that all about?
Well, double entry accounting is a system that's actually over 400 years old, where money never appears from nowhere. It always goes from one account to another account. So unlike a checkbook where you just record subtractions or additions to your checking account, in a double entry system, if you pay, for example, food, so you go out dining, the money comes from your checking account and goes into a special dining account, an expenses account. And the entire system, as a result, must always balance. You can't ever have pennies being unaccounted for anywhere of the system.
If the money goes into the dining account, then does that just stay there? Can I use it again?
No, it just stays there. An expense account is special in the sense that you can't draw from it. So in this system, there are five topical categories under which everything else appears. So there's an assets category and there's an expenses category. And if you follow the rules, then there are a whole set of definitions that follow from that. For example, what is your net worth? What is your cash flow, et cetera? Is simply a matter of performing standard equations on these categories.
Now, what's your relationship with this project? You said you started this?
I started it back in 2003, simply out of personal need. I was frustrated by some things I couldn't get done in any of the GUI tools. And so I thought, hey, I like command line tools. That's the kind of guy I am. So I'll just start something. And it's been since then.
And do you have a background in accounting?
I don't. I have no background in accounting, and I haven't taken classes. What I tried to do with Ledger is not actually to make an accounting tool. I tried to make a framework that was flexible enough to express accounting rules. So you can actually do a lot more with Ledger than just accounting, but that is the domain that it has been specialized for over time.
Okay, so now in typical uses, I'd be taking whatever I'm doing during the day, whatever financial transactions I might have during the day, and entering this how into what kind of an interface?
You enter it in your own text editor. You maintain a text file of all your transactions, which then gets handed to Ledger for reporting, but Ledger itself never creates data for you, never changes your data. You edit your data yourself by whatever means you want. It comes with a mode to make this easier to do in Emacs, and it also comes with some helpers for Vim users, but it lets you produce the data even from a script if you want. It's really up to you how the data gets made. The format in the file is kept simple enough that it's easy to edit, easy to read.
Yeah, I guess this answers the question, VI or Emacs then, huh?
Well, if you're going to ask for my preference, I maintain the Emacs mode. Someone else maintains the Vim mode.
Okay, well, I guess that sort of answers it for that. Yay, what if the Emacs column? Finally, got another guy on my side. Yay. So I would enter this data, and it would allow me to do aggregations on it, allow me to figure out where I am at the end of the month, and maybe I guess it would also help me for my taxes at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. It can do kinds of reporting that people have come up with I never even thought it could do initially. As I said, the goal of Ledger's philosophy is to be as flexible as possible, that I build in no assumptions. It has no assumptions about your home country's currency. It has no assumptions about what account names you use. It has no assumptions about the precision with which you track your values. You basically are creating this data. Ledger observes what you're doing, and it reports back to you in the same way you entered it. So it's trying to be a reflective system based on the data you're keeping. But you really get to decide what system you're going to provide. So for example, some people who do have an accounting background, some have done a cash accrual basis accounting system, and others mm-hmm. have done other forms of accounting where they're different systems. They have different philosophies about when money gets accounted for, but Ledger's able to accommodate both.
So now, you started this project to solve your own problems in 2003. When did you get other people involved, and how long did that take?
I would think that other people became interested in it about a year and a half to 2 years in. Mm-hmm. And I created an open source project for it from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And the IRC channel and the mailing list came a little bit later. Mm-hmm. It has been forked into other languages by other people. They've ported it to Smalltalk, Haskell, Perl, Python. They've taken the same ideas and the same data format. They've just re-implemented the reporting facilities. The native mm-hmm. language is C++. So I get a lot of feedback from these other people who are encountering issues with their implementations or their accounting system.
Okay, now I got to ask, why C++?
I wanted it to be fast. That was a primary requirement for me. I started the project in Python, but that only lasted about 3 weeks. When I do a report, it has to parse all your data, do all the calculations, and produce the output. For me, that needs to happen in about 100 milliseconds. Otherwise, I just feel like I'm waiting on a lag. So I do it in C++, and I keep it very optimized to be a very fast program.
And what's the sort of source line code at this point? Line source?
That's 30,000 lines of C++.
Okay, yeah, that's the question I was asking. Right, I was trying to get English all the words put together. Sometimes I have problems with those people previously listening to the show. Yes, people previously listening to the show know I have a problem with the word order occasionally. So 30,000 lines of code. What was sort of the minimal size where it started being useful for you, where you could actually use it for your day-to-day activities?
Oh, it was useful at 1,000 lines for just doing checkbook type tracking.
Okay. So the other 29,000 lines do bigger things like reporting and aggregating, things like that then?
Oh, yes. Yeah, it does many, many different kinds of reports now. It'll go fetch current stock prices from the internet. If you're asking for a today's balance of your stocks, for example.
So I could manage a portfolio with this then. I could say that some of my assets are moved into this equity account, and the equity account would have a number of stocks in that, and I could actually see what that would be like.
Correct. And it will track lot purchases too. So if you buy two different sets of stocks at different prices and then you sell them, it can actually tell you what your capital gains or loss will be, and that must balance under the double entry rules.
Now, this still is, but if I got you right at the beginning of the show, it's you're still taking text files as your input. Are there conversions? Like, say, I'm probably going to download something from my online broker, which tells me my stock portfolio. Is there some way to convert that to something that can feed into Ledger?
Well, that's something several of my users have done. They have mm-hmm. taken different comma-separated value type files. It'll also read quick and interchange format files. It'll read GNU cache files, and it'll read XML files as Ledger input and produce Ledger output for you from them. So several people have written converters at varying levels of complexity. There's one guy on the Ledger channel that has an expense reporting system that is quite remarkable to see.
So you start with the core of this stuff, and you've been able to have a community built around it that's really been bolting things on that you might not have ever predicted.
Yes. And that was part of the philosophy behind Keep It Flexible. Let people implement the systems they want.
Okay.
So, I mean, I'm really curious at this point. I guess this was my main question coming into this, right, as I'm looking up the project and stuff is, so everyone seems to be going towards the graphical side of things, right? So you've got Mint. You've got Quicken, obviously, which has been around forever, which is graphical. So, I mean, why go the other direction? Is this meant to be primarily a backend for other people's projects like GnuCache and other things? Or do you think there's really a need out there? Obviously, you had a need, but other people would want to actually use this in command line mode.
I would say the answer to that is both. I wrote it as a library to be bound to a GUI and started writing a GUI for the Mac, which I later abandoned because the command line tool was sufficient. Mm-hmm. The way I see Ledger is I really see it as accounting for engineers. Because it works like a compiler. You provide it source code, it compiles it, and it produces output from that source code. And that has actually struck a chord with a lot of my users. And they find that as helpful as the GUI can be, there are certain types of programmatic transformations you want to do to your data that Ledger makes effortless and with a GUI is nearly impossible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then, like, so I'm trying to think, like, of possible uses of this. I'm thinking maybe, you know, you run this on a server level and, you know, beyond GNU cache and other things, of course. You know, if I run this on a server level, maybe I could have a nice little GUI on my Android phone, for example, where I enter data as I'm out, you know, spending my money, if I had any, you know, going to restaurants or whatever, right? So I go to a restaurant and I spend $30 on a meal or something, and then I've got a nice little application there and I put in $30, but it's actually using Ledger on a server in the background, maybe?
Well, you don't need Ledger at that point. The creation and the editing of your data is separate from Ledger. Ledger's just the reporting tool. The app you use on your Android to capture your data could be something entirely separate.
Okay. So then at some point I would feed that data from whatever that application is into Ledger and use that for reporting.
Correct.
Okay, cool. So I'm kind of curious. There was a question in the chat room about clones of Ledger. Are there clones out there that you're aware of?
The clones I mentioned are the ones implemented in the other languages. Or do you mean workalikes that are completely separate from this project?
Well, I was talking about the ones implemented in other languages. I mean, is that something that are you working with these other folks and co-developing, or are they just kind of off on their own saying, oh yeah, that's cool, it's open source, I'll pick it up and implement it in Python or Perl or something?
They do it pretty much separately from me, although we do confer in the IRC channel a lot when they want to make design decisions. They decide whether they want to break with Ledger or if they want to stay with it. They'll ask me, what did I really intend by a certain feature? Mm-hmm. The most active project, there's two of them. There's one in Python and there's one in Haskell. And the Haskell author is a very regular and active contributor on the IRC channel. He often comes in to confer with me so that we're on the same page for his users.
Okay, so there is at least some upstream contribution or side stream contribution, I guess, in this case, back to the main project. You guys are kind of feeding off each other a little bit there.
Mm-hmm, definitely. I get a lot of ideas in from the users that turn into features that weren't part of my need requirement, but I saw how it could extend to a more general feature that would satisfy everyone.
Yeah. So who's using this? I mean, besides yourself, I mean, what kind of interest have you gotten from folks about this? Is there people that have picked this up and said, yeah, we're using this in such and such environment?
Yes, I've actually had several small businesses contact me and let me know that they're using it because, well, it's cheap for one thing, and it's amenable to any type of accounting environment. Mm-hmm. Nonprofits have used it. The Software Conservancy uses it to track income and contributions for all the projects it manages. Mm. Just as a few examples.
Yeah. Interesting. So I'm just kind of curious. I mean, it brings me back to, you know, days when I first started my professional career after college and got into a business. We were using, I think, something like Fox Pro or something like that, you know, and it kind of reminds me of going in that direction. Although I also know from, you know, myself included and a lot of open source guys I talk to that they really enjoy having command line tools at their disposal, because once you know the command line tools, it's often a lot quicker than point and click operations. So have you gotten that feedback as well?
Yes. A lot of people have said that they had used the GUI tool and they'd found certain types of constraints that just went against their usual mode of working. And that when they found several people who've come to Ledger have told me that they initially started writing one similar to it themselves. They had gotten maybe a few weeks or a few months into creating their own command line accounting tool. And for whatever reason, they stumbled across Ledger and they said, well, I'm just going to switch over to this because that's what you've been doing.
Right. Cool.
Hey, so I have a question here. As I'm listening to this, it's grown into be, Ledger's grown into be a fairly big thing now, I mean, over the 8 years of development. How much of this did you envision at the beginning in some sort of grand plan, and how much of it is organic, sort of picking up ideas here and there from people who are using it in ways you hadn't predicted?
I would say probably 20% of it was part of the grand plan.
Mm-hmm.
As I went along, certain ideas came to me where, say, for example, I was using a type of built-in equation and I thought, oh, I could make that variable based on a variable. I could provide mm-hmm. the users with a scripting language and then they could modify that equation at runtime. And that all of a sudden caused a light bulb to dawn in my head that took Ledger in a completely new direction that I never envisioned.
Talk about that. There's a built-in programming language, a subset programming language inside
this? Yeah,
there's
a tiny little mini expression language, an algebraic expression language that I call value expressions.
Okay.
And nearly all of Ledger now is built to be based on value expression calculations, allowing the user to change most of them. So the way that amounts are computed, for example, the way that amounts are displayed, what the meaning of the market value of something is on a given date, you can now there's a way to plug in to modify all of that. Plus, for example, the Python integration. It integrates with the Python language so that Ledger can be used as a module from Python or mm-hmm. Python can be used to script Ledger. And that was not part of the original vision either, but it's been something often requested. And anything that increases Ledger's flexibility is of great interest to me.
So there's the old internet saying that every advanced project eventually advances to the point where it can read email. Can this read email yet?
No, it cannot read email.
Okay. So you still got a little ways to go. There's a long-term roadmap for you.
It's correct. Yeah, I have a little ways to go.
You know, that would be cool, though, to have some sort of plug-in where it could automatically, log into your IMAP mailbox and pick out things that look like reports from your bank and incorporate the data directly.
Well, that's not the kind of thing that I would ever build into Ledger. I would say you could write a Perl script to connect your IMAP, pull the data, massage it the way Ledger wants it to see it, and then feed mm-hmm. it into Ledger.
Ah, okay. So it doesn't need to be that smart. It has helpers that it hangs out with people that can read mail.
Yeah. It tries to solve the core problem in as general a way as possible so that you can do things like that.
Very cool. What's been the most unusual thing? I know you mentioned the value calculation thing was sort of unusual, but in your history now, what's been the most unusual things that you said, I would never have thought to put that in this, and here it is now as part of the implementation?
Probably was the addition of metadata. Any posting or any transaction in a Ledger file can now have metadata associated of arbitrary type and value. And you can say, for example, this expense was for company X. This expense was for company Y. Mm-hmm. And one of my users said, what I really want is a pivot table where I want to see my balance not in terms of my accounts, but in terms of the companies that I did these expenses for. So sure. When I added in the --- pivot option, that was almost a game changer in terms of Ledger's field of use and was a complete surprise to me the way it sort of fell out from the design. It took very little to add that in.
Now, where did that idea come from?
It came from the user in our channel, in the IRC channel, who does all of our expense reporting. His name's also Randall.
Oh, boy. Let's not get confused here. Yeah. It sounds almost like, and now are you doing most of the C++ coding, or do you have a bunch of other people helping you with that?
I do all the C++ coding. I've never actually received patches except for little tiny fixes to keep it working with versions of GCC.
So you're really like, you just sort of took on the ownership in the sense that you're listening to all these user requests, and you say, oh, that's cool, and you go off and hack away for a week or so and come out with this new feature. And do you ever feel like that's going to get old after a while?
No, because I'm slow with Ledger. I'm very conservative about releases. I'll wait a year to put out a release just to make sure I get all the bug fixes in. So I don't feel a pressure. And I've always viewed Ledger as my garden. Some people go out and they work in the garden for hours a day, and it's slow progress. They're not looking for a huge return. They do it because it's enjoyable. And that's exactly why I work on Ledger.
So this is clearly a labor of love for you, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is where I go for fun.
And no ideas to productize this or make a business around it or anything?
They've come up in the past. I've thought of different ways to do it, but then I realized that that's just not going to keep me in love with the project. It's something I'll let somebody else pick up if they want to.
So you have this theory that anything that you're doing for pay is probably going to be evil and mean, huh?
No. But
okay, just checking.
Whenever there's a pressure on me to finish something by a deadline, I have a tendency to procrastinate, as I think most do.
Okay.
And so I want to have a project where it's just absolutely the pure joy of coding. No external motivation.
Okay, I was just distinguishing you from the starving artist mentality, which is that I have to suffer for my art, and you're obviously not there. You just want to have this as being a fun project.
Correct.
Okay, good. I was going to distinguish that there's many categories of people who contribute to open source, and I'm just trying to figure out where you are. That's a good one there. So this will never be stop being fun for you to tinker with, but a year between releases, what if somebody, is this including a bug fix that's out there, or you just don't have any bugs?
I do have some bugs. It's not a very large number, but I encourage people to go to the Git repository and pull the latest code. I keep the latest code very, very well vetted so that it does not have many problems in it that users will see.
So you might have minor bug fix releases. You just won't have a major release except every year.
Yeah, true. And even the minor fix releases are very far and few between. People are still using versions from 4 years back. And for their patterns of use, there's no problems for them.
And Karim just asked, what licenses is Thunder?
This is under BSD license. And others are free to use it for commercial gain if they wish.
And how did you choose the BSD license?
Oh, I want free software to be free, as in freedom. Free to do with it as you want.
I think Stallman might argue with that.
I've had my arguments with him.
Do you ever arm wrestle him? Because that's always a lot of fun.
No,
just
I think I'd
just kidding. Just kidding. So I should ask what particular BSD license, but it really doesn't matter. Once it's in BSD, that's the license I like to use too, because it sort of gives it more freedom. I agree with you there. So, and Stallman has disagreed with me on this as well. So, yeah. I appreciate that you're doing that.
This is the only step up from public domain that this has is I'd like the copyright to be maintained if people include this code in their commercial works, but I don't really have any restriction.
And have you known anybody to take this as being the core of some commercial application they have?
Not yet, no.
Okay, so you're only hoping.
I mean, maybe they've done it. I just don't know, but I don't really don't care.
I don't want to diminish the product. So other than the basic number shuffling, though, do you consider what's really the gem inside this? If someone really were to take this and use it somewhere else, what would really they be pulling it out for?
You know, I've always called Ledger a glorified calculator because that mm-hmm. really is all that it is. Mm-hmm. It is what makes Ledger more useful than simply doing strict calculations yourself is that it's thought of a lot of the problems that people run into when they're doing math with commodities.
Mm-hmm.
Say you have an account with one currency in dollars, and now you want to add Canadian dollars into that same account. How do you track an amount that's composed of two different currencies that you may want to later evaluate in terms of one of those two currencies? Ledger solved that problem for you in a very easy way. Whereas if in your own code, to go from using one currency to using an infinite number of currencies, that's usually a huge architectural change.
Mm-hmm.
Quicken, for example, does not do multiple currencies.
So you've accumulated a lot of problems solved over the years.
And not just that I'm solving particular problems, but each time something like this comes up, I take a step back and I say, what's the larger problem that this is a subset of? Because that's the problem I want to solve. I want to make the other problems disappear by virtue of the design.
That's a pretty enlightened attack to take. I mean, it took me 20 years for me to discover that in my career. Where are you in your career and what's your day job?
My day job is I work for Boost Pro Computing. We provide C++ consulting and training.
Mm-hmm. And you've been doing that for a while?
I've been doing that for a little bit. I've been involved in the C++ compiler community for my whole professional life, about 20 years or so.
So I was saying, that thing about seeing the smaller problem, seeing the larger problem, I think is something... I don't see the, not to be offensive to people just getting out of school, but I don't think they get that for quite a while. They don't see it for quite a while. It usually takes about 10 or 15 years into the career.
Yep.
So
yep.
I can tell that you've definitely come across. So that's very, very sharp that way. And it sounds like you're really, really, you're really enthusiastic about this project. I really appreciate your enthusiasm on it. I'm trying to think if there's any other questions I'm sort of curious about. What's your next release cycle? What's going to be the new release?
I've been working on version 3 for a long time now. It's pretty much ready. The code is ready to be released, or nearly ready. There's only a handful of bugs left I want to fix. But I've made a commitment to my users that I won't release 3 until the manual has been rewritten, because so much has changed between 2 and 3. That philosophy you just mentioned about trying to be more general, the downside to it in pragmatic terms is that it requires a rewrite often. Mm-hmm. And each of Ledger's major versions has represented a ground-up rewrite of nearly the entire program. And so Ledger 3 has been in process since 2006. And so this is now the fruit of everything I've learned in 1 and 2, plus mm-hmm. all the feedback from my users and such. And I'm very happy with it, but it needs to be properly documented so that people aren't just wondering what can it do. And it's just going to be in terms of when I can fit that into my schedule. I would like to have it released by this summer.
Is that something that the community can help with? I mean, is that something that you would be willing to entertain the community coming alongside and helping you write that documentation to at least take that part off your plate?
Oh, I welcome any types of contributions people want to make. If they send me anything, it might need some changes to fit into the project, but I don't turn people's contributions away.
All right, good. Because this is the right forum, you know, to ask for that kind of help. You got a lot of people in the open source community listening to this podcast. So it sounds like there's some ways that people can help if they are so inclined.
Yeah. Well, anyone who's good at technical documentation, just get in touch with me.
Mm-hmm. Great.
So I'm actually curious about your C++ design cycle then, because I dabbled in C++ for a while, then decided ew. So I'm very happy to hear that somebody enjoys it, because it always looked like the weirdest thing to me. When you're doing these redesigns, is there a lot of refactoring and reorganizing the classes and moving methods up and down?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's a funny historical note in the Ledger project. After version 2, the code had gotten spaghetti-ish enough that I was hesitant. Bugs just took too long to fix. I rewrote the project in Common Lisp and had it completely feature parity with the C++ version in Common Lisp.
Wow.
And discovered that while Common Lisp is an excellent choice for developers, I did not find it the best choice for my users. Mm. In C++, I suffer whatever pain is involved in the development process, but my users get a very fast, very portable product as an end result. So I took that Common Lisp rewrite, and I actually went and in some cases did a line-by-line conversion of the Common Lisp rewrite into C++, and that was the core of the Ledger 3 rewrite. So wow. Common Lisp helped the design of the C++.
And you said there was a Smalltalk implementation. Is it similar to the C++ implementation then? Same classes and things?
The Smalltalk one was sort of an experimental branch into Smalltalk. It didn't go very far. That author is the same one who now maintains the Haskell port.
And in Haskell, I've never gotten my head around it, no matter how many times I've tried. I think as soon as they mention the word monad, my eyes glaze over. So it's something like that. And it's everything I've heard about Haskell, it's written by people who are much more academic than I am. I'm a street-trained programmer. I don't know anything about these fancy classes you talk about. So, you know, it's all amazing stuff to me. I mean, I appreciate that there are people who do Haskell as well. Again, in your development process, so what's your primary interface in C++? Is that Eclipse?
Emacs.
Oh, Emacs. You're coding directly in C++ files in Emacs. Yay.
I would never choose anything but.
Well, now it's no surprise that Ledger doesn't have a GUI either. Although, does it work with things like that have GUIs, like GNUcache and stuff?
It reads GNUcache files, so you can maintain the data in GNUcache and do reporting on it from Ledger, but there is no direct tie-in.
And the reason you'd want to do that is because GNUcache doesn't have the kind of reporting that Ledger has?
Well, yeah. I mean, take, for example, one of the key problems that I ran into, which is, I'll put it in terms that more people might be familiar with. In Christianity, for example, there's a concept of tithing, where you give back to the church 10% of the income that you make. But before you do that tithe, you want to exclude certain types of needful expenses that might be a requirement. Now I'm a member of the Baha'i faith, but we have the same sort of tithing scheme, but it's based on a 19% rule. Mm-hmm. I needed an accounting system that would watch all my transactions for me and just tell me at the end, here's what you're liable for. I've already done the 19% calculation. I've already excluded all the needful expenses. This is your liability, and if you make payments toward it, you're now good. I tried and tried and tried many ways to implement that type of system in Quicken so that I wouldn't get behind on those payments and I wouldn't be losing the amounts. You know, I wouldn't be miscalculating it. And in Ledger, it's almost effortless. You can do this type of thing in about three lines mm-hmm. of Ledger with a feature it calls automated transactions. But there was just no way to do it in a GUI tool and no way to make the GUI tool capable of doing it except to convince their developers it was something they needed.
So in this sense, someone wouldn't have needed to know a lot of words there. Wouldn't have needed to know C++ to be able to add that kind of feature. You had enough power already in the meta language of Ledger itself.
Yes, yes. If you know value expressions a little bit mm-hmm. and you know the Ledger syntax, you're there. I try to keep C++ from my users.
Now, does value expressions have both decision and iteration? Is it a full Turing complete language?
In this version, no. It's simply algebraic expressions. I get you're in a context, and you need to produce an amount. And so you have all the mathematical operators, and you do have the ternary operator for some limited decision-making, and you have the Boolean operators. And you can define functions which can call themselves, but there are no ifs, there are no whiles. It's more like a functional language in that respect.
Is there any demand for it to become a Turing-complete language?
No one has ever asked.
I'm just waiting for the day you can do Towers of Hanoi and Ledger.
No.
Would be fine for me.
In later versions of Ledger, I think I would like to extend some of its functionality, but I'll let user demand drive that. I don't try and do everything.
It's sort of a curious phenomenon that I've seen in every templating language, for example. Every templating language, eventually somebody adds decision and then eventually adds some sort of iteration. And then it becomes about as full-blown as all the other templating languages that they loathed at the time and wanted something simple. But it all eventually grows organically back to roughly the same size with the same sort of misdesign to begin with. So I'm just wondering when Ledger will finally get to the point where it will say, we should start with something simpler again.
A guiding part of my philosophy in all coding endeavors is that simple things should be simple and hard things should be hard. And I found that in Ledger's value expression language, the key factor has to be that simple expressions need to be very simple. Mm-hmm. And that's why I didn't go with Python as a scripting language. I didn't go with any general purpose language as a scripting language because the simplest expression still needed enough annotation that it didn't flow as well. I want X plus Y to just be X plus Y. No variable declarations, no typing, mm-hmm. no special meta characters, nothing. It just should be X plus Y.
Sounds
and that
really
if you
good.
Want to do more complex things, just be willing to pay the syntax cost.
Well, I really appreciate your energy. You're obviously enthusiastic about this project. It sounds like there's more than a few people of our listeners are now going, this is exactly what I wanted. And I was trying to write something up in awk or something to try to do this. Actually, I remember writing something like this in awk many decades ago. God, was that long ago? Yeah. So I fully appreciate the problem space. I'm happy that somebody has solved it to the degree that you've solved it. The energy you put into the project, the willingness to share with us today about what it's about. Have I left anything out that you want our audience to know?
Not that I can think of, no.
Okay, very cool, very cool. Just the one little fact, how did you end up on a sailboat for a year?
A friend and I had a conversation one night, how can one live self-sufficiently? Mm-hmm. And you can't own property because then you have property taxes. So he came up with the idea of buying a van, and I came up with the idea of buying a boat, and we both did it. He lived on his van, and I lived on my boat.
And who lost the bet?
No one did. We both got married and had to make alternate accommodations.
You must be landed if you're going to be with me, yes.
Yeah, especially if they move you to Arizona.
It's hard to have a sailboat in Arizona. There's just not a lot of places to take it.
Exactly.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, I really appreciate you coming on the show today and sharing with us the wisdom and guidance of Ledger, especially some of the meta questions you were willing to answer for me. That was really kind of cool. Any last statement?
Just that I thanks for all the effort you put into Perl over the years. I've been a great admirer and user of your information.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate when people give me that kind of feedback as well. Well, I'll let you get back to what you're doing then, back to hacking on Ledger or other C++ code. That's been John. I never got your last name pronunciation. John, how do you pronounce your last name?
Wiggly.
Wiggly.
Like the grocery store, like the rabbit in the storybooks.
Okay, very good. So that's been John Wheegley talking to us about his Ledger project. Really appreciate that. What do you think, Aaron?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I mean, it's always good to hear from people that are really into their projects, like John is, obviously, with Ledger. And you know, it might not be the type of thing that you know has mass appeal, but I mean that's the beauty of open source. You've got an itch, you can scratch it, you can build your own thing and make it work, and that's what he's done. So I say, right on, keep going.
Absolutely, and I love the kinds of open source projects that come out of people solving the problem for themselves. Because you know, if you start with your own itch to scratch, you're not going to like over design and over engineer something saying, well, we think that it should be like Twitter, you know,
right,
or something. And you end up keeping it simpler and keeping it something that you can grow organically and something. And as Larry Wall found out with Perl, and I'm sure Guido did with Python and all the other guys as they're putting the stuff together, by solving your own problem first, there's this natural enthusiasm you have for it. Oh, my God, look what this did for me. And I'm just going to share this solution with you. And if you've got any feedback you want to give me, then, you know, give it to me and I'll incorporate it. It's very, very cool.
Yep.
By the way, the chat room is reminding me that I don't know if John mentioned it during the show, but there is like an IRC channel and a website and all that stuff. And we'll have that in the show notes for this show. So you can follow all that to there. But yeah, so back to what I was saying, though, there's this interesting natural enthusiasm that comes out of this. You know, the things that I've been most involved with, the things that have really worked for me. I mean, I didn't get involved in Perl as a creator of Perl. I got involved in Perl because it was solving my problems for me.
Yep.
And then a community around it was so helpful in helping me solve more of my problems that I naturally wanted to give back. So when the opportunity came along to write the Camel book, to actually spread, you know, my knowledge with technical writing together with Perl, it really sort of gave me a real opportunity to give back to the community, even though my intention was just simply to put some words together so people could help. And it's really been interesting watching these kinds of organic communities grow around just getting some problem solved that a lot of us seem to have.
Right. And it's another really good, for people that aren't involved in the open source community, it's a really good aspect of the open source community, is that they do come alongside smaller projects like this one, as well as the large projects. I mean, they don't really, there's obvious differentiation, but in terms of support and enthusiasm, a lot of times in the open source community, there's not a lot of differentiation between the small projects and the big projects. Everybody's welcome, you know, come contribute with whatever you've got. And it's a really nice, nice aspect that the open source community has that, you know, some other communities aren't quite as open, both in, you know, in both sense of the word.
Yeah. I also like the fact that unlike a lot of the projects we've had on Floss Weekly recently, this is one guy writing a bunch of code and mm-hmm. publishing it, and people have sort of forked it and given him a little bit of feedback, but a little bit of coding, but more he's just taking people's suggestions in and basically just, okay, I'll be your trained monkey, I'll do this too, but you know, because I want to. And so it's a different way of running an open source project. For something that's only 30,000 lines of code, that's feasible. You know, you get something like 300,000 lines of code. I don't think any single human could be doing that over the years. So, you know, Ledger solves this one specific problem very well and has enough glue layers on the side that other people can plug into it. And that really seems like a good combination. It seems to be working for everybody. So.
Yep.
Very good. So speaking of other projects, I have joining at the big microphone next week, because I'm going to be out on a cruise ship with Leo on Mac 11. We've got Dan Lynch coming back in as the chairman of the board, as it might be were, and he'll be bringing on occasional or co-hosts, I guess, from the rotating panel. So Dan's coming on to talk with Chris McDonough. See, I should get a pronunciation guide for all these funny names. Your name is funny. Sorry, Chris. Didn't mean it that way. But he's coming and talking about Pylons, which is a event-driven framework for Python that allows for like web creator, web services, and things like that. It's going to be a lot of fun. We've got Dan Walsh talking about SE Linux and Secure Linux. We've got the unknown guest coming up after that, the mystery guest. Please stay tuned. You'll find out who that is. Jeremy Carbaugh is going to come on with me talking about Sunlight Labs, which is making sure that government data is open source and making sure that government is accountable for their data. Very interesting. Ludovic Marcotte is going to talk to us about PacketFence and Sogo, which are captive portal solutions, allowing you to have like an open Wi-Fi port, but having you to click through acknowledgement screens or something. Darren Schreiber is going to be on with us talking about the 2600 Hertz project, which is about all forms of open source telephony, asterisk, and a bunch of other things. And then Gilad Braca, rounding out Q1 for me, is going to talk about Newspeak, which is a language that is somewhat small talk inspired, but allows you to have very formal controls over the visibility of all of your objects and classes and instances and things like that. A lot of great people coming up in Q1. I'm going to start booking my Q2 in about 2 or 3 weeks. So if people are kind of wondering when they're going to have that on, when they're going to have this on, I start booking Q2 in a couple of weeks. Probably when I get back from the cruise ship, don't want to spend 40 cents a minute booking guests. And so, again, I'm always welcoming suggestions. If you go to twit.tv/floss, there's the big spreadsheet listed there, or link to the big spreadsheet listed there, which will tell you about all of the people I'm considering to have on the show. If you have someone that wants to be on the show but isn't on that list yet, somebody I'm not talking to yet, be sure to have them email me, have the project leader email me. Please don't you just email me and say, I'd like Project X to be on there, because I'll just say, go get the project leader. Really, I've got to outsource this show, or else I'm not going to make it all the way through getting all the guests put on. You can also follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Merlyn, M-E-R-L-Y-N. If you're watching the video stream, I'm using my new C910 camera today, and I'll be live streaming karaoke tonight using that, checking it out in low light situations. So if you watch my Twitter stream, you'll be able to see where that's going to be. I also just want to say, once again, this might be the last time for you who's watching the video. I'm going to see this stained glass behind me because I am moving. So we'll have to find some new location, probably from some bunker down underneath, deep in the earth or something, like Steve Gibson does. And so I will also be coming to you from a new location. Not that I'm going to mention the name or anything, but, it's going to be a new location for future Floss Weekly broadcasts. Also, a couple times in the show, I mentioned the live stream, the chat stream. We tape live every 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays. And if you come to live at twit.tv, you can see a chat room there. And we do actually take questions in the chat room. In fact, in this particular show, I think I took about 5 or 6 questions from the chat room. So you can actually contribute to the show while it's being taped. That's all my little bullets. Aaron, any last plugs for you? You want to talk about anything?
No, you can, but I will give you a breathing break. Okay. You can go ahead and follow me at aaronnewcomb.com. There's links there to Twitter and Facebook and however you want to follow me. You can go to thesourceshow.org, which is my occasional video podcast site, although I've been helping you out, Randall, more than I've been doing my own show lately. So it's a little bit easier I don't have to do all the video editing and all that stuff. So quite frankly, it's a little bit easier just to come over here and sit in. But I will have more episodes up. And so if you want to follow me, that's also a good place to check.
Well, I also appreciate the fact that all I have to do for this show is about 4 hours a week of actually taping the show, prepping for the show, and putting together all the guests and everything. And I do want to thank my longtime now association with the Twit Network and being able to do all the editing, the production, the head end. Lots of people behind the scenes doing that, John and all the guys and all the editors whose names I don't even know. We should have like a rolling credits at the end of this show for people. But that would be so cool. Take note, John and the head. We ought to have a rolling credit for all that. I just want to thank. And also, this is show 150. And I picked up the show at show number 18, been carrying it forward to show 150. And thanks to Chris DeBon and everything for getting it started, and Leo for getting it started. And I think, as you've heard over the months, I've heard it come into the play now, just being the host and producer of the show, and really taking it to where it needs to go. And like I said, we've got probably another 200 guests on the waiting list, so I'm going to be doing this for a while. I'm loving it. I enjoy it. It's mostly labor love. I appreciate the occasional sponsors because I get a little bit of scratch here and there when that happens. That's nice. But really, I do this show because I want you guys out there to be able to be exposed to this kind of a group of talented, creative people that are bringing you the key projects in open source and the open source community. And also so from time to time, you can figure out how to make money doing this and all the other things, and fight for the causes and everything like that. So I appreciate the Twit Network for being able to let me have this platform week after week and kind of do with what I seem to be wanting to do. So I thank you, Twit Network. And thank you, Aaron, once again, for being my co-host.
Anytime.
Absolutely. And thank you all for listening out there. I wouldn't be doing this without you guys out there in the audience. I love feedback. Merlyn at Stonehenge.com. Feel free to email me with suggestions about the show or just even an occasional thank you for the show. I appreciate that from time to time. And as I always say, and we'll see you next time on Floss Weekly.
All All right.
Indeed. Good.
Hey!
Now you can tell I'm a host. I have a fez. I have a twit fez.
Yay, fezzes.
I'm going to do the opening with that.
I never got a twit fez. I'm only a co-host.
Yeah, well, you get half a fez. You get a fe.
I get a really small fez. I'm wearing it now, actually.
But where?
I'm not telling. Oh, look. What a shot. Yeah.
Hey.
Did you see that? We got to get a replay of that.
What happened? Did you throw it on?
Yeah, he just threw it, and it landed right on my head.
Oh, my God. Maybe your head's pointed, though. That's why it's easier.
Which way did it go?
Wow. There's a logo somewhere. There we go. All right.
There we go.
We can together be fez dispensers.
Yeah.
Come on, stomach, don't growling. Position my fez. Fez position. There we go. Oops. It's hard to do that once in the mirror. It's like the other way. There we go. Floss Weekly is brought to you by MailRoute for all your email, spam, and virus protection. Oh, protecting your email. Bad placement of comma. I want to protect my viruses. I'm not punch drunk. This is just Diet Coke here, okay? Oh, it's Diet Pepsi. Maybe that's the difference. Okay. Okay, so in the tease. Oh, God. I'm already laughing at my hat. I don't know I should, though. I should, because that's the only chance I get to use.
Maybe you better eat something, Randall.
I did get louder because I was looking at that. All right. Why are those correlated? That makes no sense. Hope you guys are hitting the mute switch on your end. All right. How do they do this professionally? Well, I've seen those outtakes at the end of the movies, and the guys are all breaking into laughing when they're trying to do a comedy, so I don't feel so bad.